name is Edward Shawcross, Dr. Edward Shawcross, and I'm here to talk to you today about my book, The Last Emperor of Mexico.
Thank you very much indeed, Dr. Shawcross, for talking to the History Reclaimed Book Prize podcast. Congratulations on being shortlisted. Tell me a little bit about what made you write this book now and why you think it's, dare I say, still relevant?
Yes, of course. So, I mean, the first thing to say is that it's just an absolutely fascinating period, but little known. So if people do know about it at all, it's normally through the Edouard Manet painting, The Execution of Maximilian, which depicts this extraordinary scene of a Habsburg archduke who becomes emperor of Mexico facing a firing squad on a dusty hilltop overlooking a provincial Mexican town. So although the painting is extremely well known, the history behind it isn't, and it's operatic in scale. And it's something that I've always been fascinated by, and it actually grew out of my doctoral research, which was on the wider long durée of Franco-Mexican relations in the 19th century, and specifically on Mexican conservative thought. As I say, it's such a wonderful story with brilliant characters that it was something I wanted to bring to, you know, in the form of a narrative history rather than necessarily an academic analysis. In terms of its relevance today, I think, well, sadly, in one sense, it's all too relevant, because it's an example of regime change. And the reason why Maximilian is in Mexico, this Habsburg Archduke, is because of Napoleon III, the French emperor, who, at the behest of Mexican exiles, launched an ambitious plan to create a monarchy in Mexico. But it has to be said by some Mexicans, but the problems that Maximilian and indeed the French army face in Mexico when they get there are not dissimilar to many of the problems that Western commanders would have faced in interventions in more recently in places like Iraq and Afghanistan. So that sense of regime change and the problems that it creates and the difficulty of what today would be called nation building are absolutely present in the book.
Did you follow in the footsteps of other, should we say, historians, biographers? How new was your research and those eureka moments you necessarily have when you're knee deep in perhaps the archives?
Well, I would say that there have been a few books written on this period, but not a huge amount in the English language, and most of them quite a long time ago. So in that sense, it's building on the work of certainly of academic scholars, particularly in Mexico, in fact, who've kind of excavated this period and tried to understand it better than it was. And in terms of English language, not a huge amount of work either academically or in more popular history in recent times. And so, yeah, it's based on a huge amount of archival research, some of it coming out of my doctoral thesis, which was a fairly long time ago now, but also, you know, more recent trips to archives in London, Paris, Vienna, and indeed in Mexico, because the story is so grand and sweep and brings in so many different nations and actors. It requires good research on two continents, North America and Europe, endlessly finding fascinating vignettes and little stories and anecdotes, which most of which you can never include in the book, of course, because you've got to condense it down to a readable narrative. But a hugely enjoyable research process.
Well, you've anticipated my next question, because we do like it, History Reclaimed, to hear those little anecdotal stories, perhaps the ones that made you think, instead of giving up, I want to go on. Can you just tell us two or three of them?
Well, I think, as I say, so Maximilian, he goes to Mexico in 1864 with his wife, Princess Charlotte. She's better known to Mexican history as Carlotta. And it's fair to say that Napoleon III, the emperor who's led them to accept this offer of the Mexican crown offered by Mexican exiles, has launched an incredibly duplicitous and a mendacious diplomatic scheming, which is what he loves. And Napoleon III enjoyed nothing more than smoke-filled rooms where he could plot conspiracies to glorify France. And this is one of them. And just following, actually, in the archives, Napoleon III's elaborate game, because he has to represent the situation in Mexico to Maximilian as much better than it is. And to do that, he has to weave this web of deceit, as I say. So sort of following, it must have been incredibly difficult for him to know who he was lying to and at which point and what information to give to various different people. So it was fascinating tracking that in the archives, misrepresenting Britain's view about it, misrepresenting the popularity of monarchy in Mexico to Maximilian, while at the same time, you know, very sort of Machiavellian letters to French politicians and diplomats saying, you know, you have to sort of brief, you know, the Austrian foreign ministry about these things and leak information. So it was, you know, incredible the way in which his mind was able to work on that scale, but with disastrous consequences. There are also so many just wonderful vignettes and moments for when Maximilian and Carlotta get to Mexico. And Maximilian was You know, he was a sort of Alexander von Humboldt would have been one of his heroes, and he loved natural science and botany and butterflies and things like that. So these extraordinary moments where he's under fire, and he, you know, afterwards he'll write a letter to a friend saying, as the bullets whistled past me, I noticed the most beautiful butterflies fluttering about in the distance. And these moments are just, you know, it's quite extraordinary. I think the one that's got to be at the top in terms of drama is Charlotte or Carlotta. Things are going very badly for Maximilian in Mexico, and Napoleon III withdraws his support. Maximilian resolves to abdicate. Carlotta, furious, talks him out of it and resolves to go to Europe to speak to Napoleon and to persuade him to continue his support. That doesn't work, but she then goes to the Vatican, where she's going to plead for papal support from the Pope in the hope of rallying Catholic Mexico behind this flagging regime of her husband. But the pressure is so much that in a dramatic meeting with the Pope, she breaks down, sobbing uncontrollably in the corridors of the Vatican, screaming that Napoleon III is out to poison her, wants her murdered. And for sheer drama, that's hard to beat. So as I say, there's a lot of great stories within this tale of the Mexican Second Empire. But I think Carlotta's breakdown in the Vatican for sheer drama can't quite be beaten.
If we're looking at those stories now, you mentioned earlier that you thought it was relevant today because of the conflicts that we're witnessing in the world. But any lessons that can be learnt, that's a question of historians that we often ask, isn't it? What are the lessons for today from your research and your book?
Well, I'm always extremely wary of drawing any lessons or conclusions. As I say, you know, there are parallels with later foreign interventions. And what's striking is the language that both Maximilian and Napoleon III use. Often there are sort of mission accomplished moments which echo, you know, George Bush Jr.'s approach to Iraq, or the euphemisms that are used in terms of pacification, which is a euphemism for sort of brutal counterinsurgency tactics, and winning over hearts and minds. So I think there are parallels. I'm not a military historian specifically, or indeed, you know, an expert on 21st century foreign policy and intervention. So I'd be wary of drawing lessons. But as I say, the parallels are striking. And there are moments in the book where you can't help but feel the present resonating. So one which came afterwards, actually, is the French announced their withdrawal at the beginning of 1866 from Mexico because the resistance from Benito Juarez and those who oppose the empire is too forceful, as well as under pressure of the United States of America. He announces a phased withdrawal so that troops will come out by the, you know, sort of within 2 years' time at different points. And of course, you know, that's very similar to approaches that were tried in Afghanistan. And actually, on the day that the French are leaving Mexico City, which is the 5th of February, 1867, and it's the last day that they can guarantee safety of refugees. So these are people who have worked with and supported Maximilian's regime, some of them imperialista Mexicans, others of them Europeans. And there's, you know, horrific scenes of panic and refugees desperately struggling to follow in the French army's wake and make it on the last boats out. And of course, that's so much resonance recently with current events. All I would say for the French, though, is that despite the enormous value of the horses that they had in Mexico, they didn't take those back. They made room for the people. So perhaps rather than lessons that can be learned, we might argue that lessons haven't been learned, given that sort of recent events in Afghanistan, where animals seem to have been prioritised in one way or another.
And of course, that fear of poisoning, very relevant to Ukraine today and the peace negotiations, you know, people fearing sort of every action that surrounds them.
Well, of course, and I hadn't thought of that, but you're absolutely right. Carlotta, Napoleon III, duplicitous though he was, wasn't trying to poison her. But yeah, absolutely, that sort of fear of what's going on in high power politics and it being a dangerous world is, of course, something that is all too apparent today as well.
Our curiosity at History Reclaimed in how you got the book published, because we have young academics visiting our website, historyreclaimed.co.uk, but often publishers are wary of turning a doctorate into a book, aren't they? Was that difficult to get a publisher and convince them that, you know, you could perhaps make it, should I say, more entertaining than your doctorate?
Well, it certainly is. Well, I hope it's more entertaining than my doctorate, because I wouldn't call that entertaining at all. All I would say in that is that it was a very small part of my doctorate, the Mexican Second Empire. So these events take place in the 1860s. And my doctoral thesis, which was then revised and published as an academic monograph, covers 1821, which is Mexican independence, right up to 1867, the execution of Maximilian, and was a really sort of in-depth look at French imperial strategy in Latin America, as well as the intellectual thought of Mexican conservatives, and therefore the Second Mexican Empire, Maximilian, plays a part in that wider story, but it's not the focus. Whereas this book, although it grew out of that project, and of course, you know, understanding the historiography of both France and Mexico in the 19th century made it much easier when it came to writing it, was, you know, in very different focus and indeed a very different style. So I suppose, I mean, you know, I'm going from the specific to the general, but if I were to give any advice, it would be to focus on the story for a book like this, rather than thinking of a way, well, how can I take the entire project and repackage that as something readable. But of course, you know, it will depend on what that project is.
And any difficulty in getting a publisher? Did you work in harmony with your publishers, or were they saying, you're a bit late with that book, Edward?
No, they were very, very good. The publisher in the UK is Faber and Faber, intensely relaxed about deadlines, incredibly helpful, brilliant editing as well, and excellent suggestions, but giving me complete freedom to write the book as I wanted, with no kind of overbearing input whatsoever. So I have nothing but praise.
Just in terms of our final quick-fire questions, may I ask you three quick-fire questions? And the first of those is, any writer's block? You had to go to Mexico, you had to get permission to go into those archives. Did you just think, oh, I can't write today, I can't get down to it?
No, not really. I love writing. And it's, as, you know, as I say, the story is just so extraordinary and dramatic that thinking of ways to tell it and to get that research out there in a meaningful and entertaining way while retaining historical analysis, I never really had writer's block. What I had is editor's block. I very much hated the process of relentlessly, you know, cutting and changing and improving, which is a shame because obviously that's a, you know, a huge part of the book. But in terms of writing it, no, I could have gone on and I could have written, you know, hundreds of thousands of more words, but unfortunately I suspect no one would have wanted to read them. So the writing, no, but the editing, yes.
How long did it take you to write?
Took from the contract being signed, which would have been September 2019, I submitted it about this time last year, March last year. Yeah, it was the final version. So just under 2 years. But the caveat that a huge amount of the research, especially the secondary reading, the historiography of both France and Mexico, I covered, you know, in 3-4 years of postgraduate research prior to that. So I knew where the bodies, often quite literally, were buried in that sense, and so the research had by and large been done, which made the process a lot quicker than it would have been.
This I really am curious about as an interviewer, but spotting your own mistakes, come on, if you're writing something with that many words, you often wake up at night and think, gosh, was that the right date? Did I make a mistake there? Did you have to have a cold sweat in terms of thinking about what your mistakes may be? Because there must have been some.
Oh, gosh, yes. No, and I still wake up at night, you know, in cold sweats, terrified about mistakes and errors. And with a story like this, there are points where the archives are incredibly rich and the published accounts as well. And there are other points, you know, the sort of crisis towards the end of the empire when Maximilian is under siege. And you're dealing with, you know, eyewitness accounts from 5-6 people, and they all differ as well. So, you know, about what happened when, or even who was in the room and that kind of thing, who said what. And at that point, you know, you have to make a judgment as a historian, what you think is most plausible, what the evidence can support. But it's, you know, it's never going to be 100% in your mind that it's right. And someone can always challenge it and say, well, actually, you know, this account says this, and I think it's more believable. But also just, you know, factual errors as well are something that haunt me. And indeed, you know, even typographical ones, which I suppose the publisher should be on them as well. Yeah, and I'm sure there are mistakes in there. I'm sure there are.
Well, thank you for confessing to that cold sweat at nights. But just finally, and this really is our final question to you, Dr. Shortcross, is a film you've conjured up remarkable images. We can imagine people in period costume in Mexico and even in the Vatican. But do you think your book is going to make a film?
I think whether my book will, I think the story will be absolutely fantastic, incredibly cinematic, extraordinary characters, very conflicted, complicated people caught up in this, you know, and with Carlotta, an extraordinary woman right at the heart of the empire, as well as the nemesis of Maximilian Benito Juarez, who's an equally extraordinary figure who ultimately triumphs over the, you know, the Mexican empire. And those, you know, cinematic moments, butterflies, you know, fluttering as bullets whistle past, and breakdowns in the Vatican. I think it would make an extraordinary film, but no one has rung me up yet and bought the rights. So, you know, if there's anyone's listening and wants to turn it into a Hollywood blockbuster, then I am available.
I think the timing's quite good. Dr. Shawcross, thank you very much indeed for talking to the History Reclaimed Book Prize podcast series today. And I wish you good luck and congratulations on getting onto the shortlist. And we will very much enjoy getting our readers to read your book.
No, thank you very much. It's a tremendous honour and wonderful for you to take the time to speak to me and interview me today. Thank you.